databronnen buiten de BRP die ze daarvoor zouden kunnen gebruiken. Mm. Maar ik kan me wel voorstellen dat dat een goede vertraging op kan leveren.
Ja, als dat is waar ze naar op zoek zijn, deze informatie over waar je geboren bent, dan is BRP zeker iets waar zij op zullen targeten. En ja, dan is dat ook iets wat wij moeten verdedigen.
En misschien nog over de beveiliging, want we hebben het gehad over een Nederlandse statelijke actor die het BRP beveiligt. Maar ik neem aan op dit moment bijvoorbeeld dat de AIVD niet een team heeft voor de beveiliging van het BRP. Wie doet de dagelijkse beveiliging? Dus wie zou het opvallen dat er iets niet in de haken is?
Ik denk dat de AIVD wel onderzoek doet naar mogelijke actoren die dat zouden willen aanvallen.
Mm.
Maar in eerste instantie zijn het natuurlijk de softwareontwikkelaars en systeembeheerders die systemen hebben gebouwd en vormgegeven en dagelijks beheren, die dat moeten beveiligen.
Mm.
En er zullen ook wel informatiebeveiligers achter zitten. Dus organisaties uit Nederland die heel veel kennis hebben van het beveiligen en monitoren van systemen, dat dagelijks doen.
Wat was een van de grote partijen die het BRP levert? Laten we Centric nemen. Die bieden een soort clouddienst aan voor het BRP, als ik me niet vergis. Is het dan zo dat het ook Centric is die de beveiliging levert? Of is dat vaak een combinatie van partijen?
Ik weet het niet zeker. Mm. Maar Centric heeft dan, ga ik vanuit, de software gebouwd. Mm. Daar zit daar zit een behoorlijk hoge maat van vertrouwen in. Die moeten hun software wel op zo'n manier bouwen dat het veilig is.
Mm-hmm.
Ook als er processen zijn waar systeembeheerders die systemen moeten beheren en systemen moeten updaten en dat soort dingen, dan zouden zij die processen op zo'n manier moeten vormgeven dat dat veilig is.
Mm.
Denk aan bijvoorbeeld een vier-ogen-principe.
Mm.
Maar ik denk ook dat er derde partijen zijn die de systemen monitoren.
Hmm, dus er moeten veel mensen wegkijken, eigenlijk ook.
Dat is één. En daarnaast zullen er ook integriteitsbewakingen zijn en netwerkmonitoring die gek verkeer of uitzonderingen wel zullen detecteren.
Dus het zijn niet allemaal mensen, het zijn ook computers.
Het is een combinatie, ja. Ja, het zijn computers die in de gaten gehouden worden door mensen en die vormgegeven zijn door mensen.
En dat is ook wel de volgende stap, denk ik. Want nou ja, in de Tweede Wereldoorlog, in het eerste rapport van de politie stond, van de daders ontbreekt ieder spoor. Dus ze hebben in eerste instantie geen sporen achtergelaten. Later zijn ze toch verlinkt door een NSB'er, helaas. En zijn ze opgepakt. Maar het geen sporen achterlaten is voor jou ook een grote uitdaging, denk ik.
Absoluut. Zeker als je het over zo'n systeem hebt waarbij integriteitsbewaking hoog in het vaandel staat en er veel backups zijn. Dus je moet aanzienlijk aanvalsoppervlak in kaart brengen en een hoop systemen over gaan nemen. Ja, daar zijn zoveel detectiemogelijkheden. Dus ja, dat is heel lastig om dan ongezien te blijven.
Waar zie je dan het grootste risico in dit scenario?
Ik denk dat de aanval wel gedetecteerd zal worden. Het is even de vraag of ze zien door wie.
En zien ze dan ook meteen wat je aan het doen bent? Of is het, er zit nu iemand op ons systeem?
Het hangt er vanaf wat je aan het doen bent en hoe zij dat hebben ingericht.
Ja.
Maar als je te snel bent, en stel je voor je hebt toegang tot de source of truth, de database waar nu de BRP in staat opgeslagen, en je verandert daar één waarde, en dan denk ik dat dat toch wel heel snel gaat opvallen. En dat je beter even vanaf de zijlijn nog goed kan uitzoeken hoe dat systeem gemonitord wordt.
Ja, wat ik hier wel interessant aan vind is, kijk, bijvoorbeeld de AIVD wil constant meer kunnen, omdat er constant cyberaanvallen plaatsvinden. We horen heel vaak, iedereen zit in elkaars data te snuffelen. Dan vraag ik me af, valt het wel echt zo op als wij ook even in dat systeem gaan neuzen? Of hebben ze het zo druk met al die andere actoren die daar ook al op zitten?
Ze zijn ongetwijfeld heel druk. maar het is natuurlijk even de vraag, dat is het verschil tussen lezen en schrijven.
Meekijken of echt die data veranderen.
Exact. En daarom heeft België in dit geval toch ook wel een voordeel. Want zij hoeven het alleen maar één keer in te zien en kunnen het kopiëren en daarna weg zijn. Maar als we een aanval doen op de integriteit van die data, daar zullen, denk ik, veel meer beveiligingsmaatregelen zijn. En daardoor is dat voor ons lastiger. Maar hetzelfde geldt voor de beschikbaarheid. Daar zijn ook veel meer beveiligingsmaatregelen. Dus een aanval op de beschikbaarheid is voor ons ook een stuk lastiger en maakt het voor België dus juist makkelijker in dit geval. Ik denk dat de mooiste oplossing is dat we de systemen zo vormgeven dat we dit compleet proberen te voorkomen.
Precies. Ja. Nee, ik vind het wel een interessante om het ook nog even over te hebben. Want in dit hele gesprek merken we steeds van, Oh, het lijkt eigenlijk best wel makkelijk. Oh nee, toch niet. Misschien kunnen we er wel in. Oh nee, toch niet. Maar over de vormgeving van die systemen, wat bedoel je daarmee? Hoe zou het dan vormgegeven moeten worden?
We hebben het hier over een systeem wat voor de Nederlandse mensen gebruikt wordt en ook betaald wordt door Nederland. Mm. Het zou dan denk ik ook heel mooi zijn als we dat als Nederlanders kunnen valideren hoe zo'n systeem werkt. Je zou dat compleet open source kunnen maken.
Ja, dus dat wij als burgers met enige technische kennis kunnen zien hoe heeft de overheid dit ingericht.
Ja.
Maar hoe maakt het dan veiliger? Want dan kan je er toch ook makkelijker bij?
Nou, dat hoeft op zich niet. Een compleet veilig systeem, daarvan zou de code publiek beschikbaar kunnen zijn. En dan kan de informatie nog steeds veilig zijn. Zo gaat het ook met het versleutelen van informatie. De algoritme die nodig zijn om informatie te versleutelen, die zijn bekend. Alleen het wachtwoord wat je nodig hebt, dat is geheim.
Dus wat je zegt is, als het volledig open source systemen zijn, zouden ze beter bestand zijn tegen aanvallen door België?
Het is niet zo dat open source software per se veiliger is.
Maar
sterker nog, in sommige gevallen kun je argumenteren dat iets wat niet publiek beschikbaar is, lastiger is om te hacken. Maar in ieder geval kun je wel zeggen, als het open source is, kunnen we dit met z'n allen valideren. En weten we misschien allemaal waar de informatie staat en hoe je daarmee omgaat. En je zou het zelf zo ver door kunnen trekken dat je een systeem bedenkt waarbij de overheid zijn eigen mensen niet kent. Dat is natuurlijk lastig. En de overheid heeft daar waarschijnlijk helemaal geen baat bij. En het is in sommige gevallen ook best handig dat de overheid de inwoners kent. Maar er zijn wel systemen te bedenken waarbij wij zelf eigenaar zijn van onze eigen informatie.
Een soort zero knowledge BRP?
Nou, bijvoorbeeld.
Hoe zou dat eruit zien dan?
Ah ja, dat hangt helemaal af van waar de informatie precies nodig is. Maar er zijn bijvoorbeeld wachtwoordmanagers die zijn eigen wachtwoorden niet kennen. Dus dan heb je een server waarop jouw wachtwoorden staan. En als die gehackt wordt, heeft de aanvaller nog steeds niks.
En hoe zou dit er, kan je het me uitleggen hoe dit eruit zou zien in bij een overheid? Want dit is voor mijn beperkte technische kennis, gaat het echt te ver. Dus hoe kan je een,
dit gaat echt te ver.
Nou ja, voor mij dus, ik kan best wel veel ver meekomen. Maar hoe kan een overheid jou registreren zonder dat hij de gegevens over jou heeft?
Ja, het is natuurlijk heel lastig om dit over het BRP te zeggen. Ik kan niet zomaar even een architectuur bedenken.
Ja, doe even.
waarbij dit alle problemen oplost. Maar met hele moeilijke cryptografie.
Ja, maar misschien dat we het anders moeten conceptualiseren.
Sorry, hebben we het nu eigenlijk over de blockchain?
Nee, daar gaan we het niet over hebben.
Oké, maar misschien een ander concept. Dus niet hoe kan de overheid mij registreren zonder iets over mij te weten, maar hoe kan ik mezelf bij de overheid registreren?
Ja, exact.
Dus en dan dus bijvoorbeeld, jij hebt een ID-kaart waarop jouw informatie wordt opgeslagen. En de overheid kan daarop bevragingen doen waarbij ze niet de informatie zelf terugkrijgen, maar ja-nee antwoorden. Of nou, dit klopt voor 80%. Dus dat is denk ik een soort systeem wat eventueel veiliger zou kunnen zijn. Behalve dan natuurlijk dat we nog steeds te maken hebben met een statelijke actor. Maar wel dan met een eventueel compleet decentraal systeem. Dus moeilijker?
Ja, dat denk ik wel. Ja. En je bent in ieder geval volledig eigenaar van je informatie. Je hebt volledig inzicht in aan wie je die informatie geeft.
Ja.
En hoe je die informatie geeft. Ik noem maar wat, bijvoorbeeld een leeftijdsverificatie heeft niet altijd je geboortedatum nodig.
Ja.
Dat soort dingen.
En je zou misschien zelf dan kunnen besluiten, vind ik het eigenlijk nodig dat mijn geboorteland op mijn registratie te vinden is.
Ja, want dat vond ik ook wel interessant aan eigenlijk alles wat we nu besproken en ontdekt hebben, is ingericht. Nou ja, natuurlijk, we hebben een democratisch principe en uiteindelijk zijn het mensen die wij gekozen hebben die erover beslist hebben. Maar ik heb ook het gevoel dat ik er als burger heel weinig grip op heb. Ja. En ook als we het hebben over die eerste vraag die we ons stelden, dus zeg maar hoe kwetsbaar ben ik door de gegevens die de overheid over mij opslaat. Hmm. Nou ja, als ik het zo hoor, hoe moeilijk wij als verzetsgroep bij die gegevens kunnen komen, ben ik dus eigenlijk heel kwetsbaar. Misschien wel juist omdat er zoveel backups zijn. Dus voor mijn gevoel is het heel erg ingericht zodat het handig is voor de overheid, maar niet per se het beste voor de burger.
Nee, daar ben ik ook een beetje bang voor. Er zijn wel een heleboel initiatieven die dat wel zo doen. Zo heb je onder andere de Irma-app, dat heet tegenwoordig Jiffy. Nou, zo zijn er ook op landelijk en Europees niveau allerlei van dat soort initiatieven. Maar ja, Nederland, maar ook Europa zijn erbij gebaat om die informatie wel te hebben. Dus daar is misschien een beetje een belangenverstrengeling.
Maar het is natuurlijk ook voor ons op veel momenten heel fijn dat de Belastingdienst weet waar jouw oproepbrief naartoe moet.
In principe mijn oproepbrief wel, maar dat ik dus altijd zie dat, nou ja, sinds een aantal jaar heeft de Belastingdienst eigenlijk mijn hele aangifte al ingevuld. Hmm. En hoef ik alleen nog maar ja of nee te zeggen.
Hmm. Ja.
Ja, handig, maar wil ik echt dat, nou ja, al deze gegevens op deze manier gedeeld worden? Ja. Ik wil daar in ieder geval over kunnen kiezen.
Ja. Nou ja, en volgens mij, als ik het me goed herinner van de vorige aflevering, is er niet zoveel gesprek over wat staat er nou wel en niet in dat BRP, klopt dat?
Uit de gesprekken die ik gevoerd heb, begreep ik wel dat er een soort van zorgvuldig naar gekeken wordt. En dat er nu ook gesprekken zijn bijvoorbeeld over moet geslacht nog wel opgeslagen zijn of niet. Of kunnen we dat op een andere manier doen. Maar waar die gesprekken nou precies plaatsvinden en hoe publiek die discussies zijn, ja, dat wordt niet helemaal helder. En nou ja, wat me ook opviel in onze zoektocht naar informatie hierover, is dat best wel veel mensen het ook wel heel spannend vonden om deze casus te bespreken, zeg maar. Dus nou ja, toen we het aankondigden van goh, we willen een Godwin maken en dan die aanslag op het bevolkingsregister en niemand zit nu, nou ja, jij zit nu achter deze microfoon, maar we hebben voor niemand van de BRP achter de microfoon. Dat vind ik ook wel interessant.
Nou ja, volgens mij ook heel expliciet, toch? Het was een veel gevoeliger onderwerp dan we dachten.
Ja.
En wij waren daar heel verbaasd over. Ben jij daar verbaasd over?
Ik kan me voorstellen dat Nederland dit een hele belangrijke databron vindt. En zeker de beveiliging daarvan hoog in het vaandel heeft. Dus nou ja, wat je wel vaak ziet is, als iets veilig moet zijn, dat mensen het er dan maar niet over gaan hebben. Dan kun je ook niks uitlekken. Maar ik denk wel, als iets echt veilig is, dan zou je er ook compleet transparant over moeten kunnen zijn.
Ja. Dus jij denkt dat de gevoeligheid hem vooral zit in eigenlijk de veiligheidskant?
Ja, en misschien wel de twijfel daarover.
Ah. Dat is dan voor ons wel weer goed nieuws, toch?
Voor de verzetsgroep wel. Voor de burgers misschien wat minder.
Nee. Ik bedenk me net iets heel anders. Namelijk, België heeft ook het internet nodig om bij deze data te kunnen.
Nou, daar heb ik ook over na zitten denken. Mm. Maar het internet is ook zo ontworpen dat beschikbaarheid heel belangrijk is. En kunnen misschien wel een gedeelte van België tijdelijk van het internet afhalen. Maar ja, er zijn zoveel protocollen bedacht om via een omweg dan toch weer op het internet te komen. Dat is mogelijk.
Dus eigenlijk zijn alle systemen te stevig om echt te kunnen slopen?
Nee, dat zal je me nooit horen zeggen. Alles is te hacken met genoeg tijd. Maar dit zijn wel systemen waar goed over nagedacht is.
Goed, we hebben heel veel mogelijke wegen naar wel of niet bij die data komen besproken. Heel eerlijk gezegd maak ik me best een beetje zorgen Ja, over die mate waarop verzet nog mogelijk is in deze tijd. Als ik zie, nou ja, dat we bij elke mogelijkheid toch wel weer op een ja maar of of nou ja, dan misschien net niet of maar heel even kort stuiten. Maar gelukkig staat België op dit moment nog niet aan onze poort te rammelen. En nou ja, ik ben eigenlijk heel benieuwd wat kunnen we nu doen om ervoor te zorgen dat misschien in de toekomst dat verzet wel mogelijk is.
Nou, we zouden nu ervoor kunnen zorgen dat die systemen op zo'n manier ontworpen zijn dat wij als inwoners van Nederland inzage hebben in waar de informatie staat, waar de informatie naartoe gaat, hoe daarmee omgegaan wordt. En idealiter dat we zelf eigenaar zijn van de informatie, dit zelf kunnen verwijderen, aanpassen, bij ons kunnen houden en zelf bepalen waar dat naartoe gaat.
Oh ja, ik had eigenlijk verwacht dat we een gesprek zouden hebben over dataminimalisatie. Mm-hmm. Maar dit gaat echt een stuk verder. En wat ik heel interessant vind is dat we hebben gehoord, het gaat eigenlijk niet over niet zozeer over de beschikbaarheid van de informatie, maar over de integriteit ervan, eventueel een soort beïnvloeden. Wat me ook opvalt is dat echt veel meer mensen moeten wegkijken dan vroeger, wat ook heel veel complexiteit toevoegt. En het is voor Frank of onze verzetsgroep veel moeilijker om ongezien deze aanval te doen. Of veel moeilijker, misschien is het eigenlijk wel onmogelijk vanwege het feit dat we niet alleen de informatie willen uitlezen of onbeschikbaar willen maken, maar ook willen schrijven in zo'n database.
Ja, en we begonnen eigenlijk ons onderzoek met de vraag of we nog steeds zo kwetsbaar zijn als toen.
Ja.
Oei. Ja, het gaat dus over veel meer dan die oorspronkelijke vraag, denk ik.
Ja.
Maar als we hem toch even terugpakken. Hebben we geleerd van het verleden? Wat hebben we geleerd? Wat heeft de overheid geleerd?
We lijken eigenlijk kwetsbaarder, zou ik zeggen.
Ja.
Kwetsbaarder en we kunnen kwetsbaarder, want er is meer informatie. En kwetsbaarder omdat we onszelf minder goed kunnen verdedigen.
Deze podcast werd gemaakt door Bits of Freedom. Voortaan de podcast elke twee weken vers in je inbox. Schrijf je dan in voor de podcast nieuwsbrief. Je hoorde mij, Inge Manet, onze directeur Evelyn Austin en onze gast Frank Platel. Onze jingle werd gemaakt door Tim Goehorn. De podcast werd geproduceerd en geëdit door Randal Pelen van YOLO Media. Veel dank aan onze donateurs en natuurlijk aan jou, de luisteraar.
Geen datalekken, achterbakse tracking, geen bizarre wetten, gewoon geen wereldvreemde shit voor het wereldwijde web. Wil jij weten wat er speelt rondom het internet? Dit is Bits of Freedom.
Welcome to Verizon Wireless. The cellular customer you have called is not available at this time. Please try your call again later. 0032004. Announcement 1.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. But if they could, they would. Only live on for the best, expect the worst. I hope that's understood. Bundy, no!
And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Wednesday evening, joined tonight by Kyle.
Hello. Hi.
Out in Signal Land, we have Rob T. Firefly.
Good evening.
We have Gila.
Hello there.
And we have Alex.
Yes, you do. Good evening.
And tonight is a special WBAI call-in show. We will not be doing overtime tonight, which usually follows the program on YouTube. YouTube will be quiet tonight. We will not be going there. However, we will be here for the hour ahead, taking your phone calls at a special phone number we will give out in a moment as soon as we catch up with all sorts of things. You know, we've heard so much already about the online age verification shindig that's coming down the pike, and I have to say I'm not looking forward to this. Not looking forward to this at all. Doesn't bode well. Looks like it's going to be all kinds of issues, problems for privacy and things like that. But here's a fun story. In Utah, you know, it's going to happen in Utah first. Their former Senate Bill 73, the Online Age Verification Amendment, it takes effect right now, today. Yeah. If you're listening in Utah, too late. It's May 6th. So that makes the state the first in the United States to explicitly target VPN use as part of age verification legislation. Yeah, VPN use. So what does that mean? Okay, well, signed by Governor Spencer Cox on that's a great governor name, Governor Spencer Cox. He signed it on March 19, and it's a controversial law. It establishes that a user is considered to be accessing a website from Utah if they are in Utah. Okay, that's not the controversial part, I don't think. Regardless of whether they use a VPN or a proxy that masks their IP address. Okay, so basically the statement is that even if you use a VPN, which allows you to mask your location, which is kind of how the internet is designed, even if you do that, you're considered to be in Utah. But if they don't know you're in Utah, they can't really prove you're in Utah, at least not easily. Here's the other thing. It also prohibits covered websites. I'm not sure what covered websites mean. Maybe Alex, you can help us with this. But it prohibits them from sharing instructions on how to use a VPN to bypass age checks. Well, we are not a website. And if we were a website, we would probably not be a covered website. And no matter what, we are not in Utah. And we have no intention of going to Utah. So let's tell people how to use a VPN to bypass AIDS checks, just so we can get that out there. I imagine just load a program such as NordVPN. What's another one? EasyVPN. There's all kinds of things that end in VPN that are VPNs.
Express
VPN. That's another one. And basically, what you do is you pick a location, a country, a city, and you say, "I want to come from there." And all of a sudden, anywhere you go to, according to that particular destination website, you are now coming from the place you chose. Now, Google goes crazy trying to defeat this. And I don't know, you know, when they turned into such evil control freaks, but yeah, they want to keep track of where everybody is. And if you're coming from someplace that they think maybe you're not actually there, they'll try to block you. That's the sad truth. So it's a cat and mouse game of VPNs trying to stay one step ahead. But there are lots and lots and lots of people working on making this happen, because this is the net. This is what the net is all about. And yeah, you might have little things like age verification that get complicated by people not telling the truth about where they actually are. That's a horror. But the health of the internet is what will survive in the end if we fight, and I think that's something we need to do, because this is bad what we're seeing unfold here, where they're trying to crack down on everybody and tell people that you're not allowed to even explain how the technology works. Now, NordVPN has called the law an unresolvable compliance paradox and a liability trap, arguing that it holds websites responsible for identifying users whose tools are specifically designed to be unidentifiable. The EFF warned that the legal risk could push sites to either ban all known VPN IPs or mandate age verification for every visitor globally. And obviously none of this is what any of us want. Alex, any thoughts?
Yeah, this is very bad stuff. And it will seem to probably overblock, because if you're just basing blocking on the use of a network or an ASN, an asynchronous number for a network that indicates an IP address likely belongs to a data center or something like that would belong to a VPN, that's not going to be 100% effective as well. It's also the kind of thing, to my mind, that brings us a lot closer to what Russia has been doing in banning the use of VPNs locally within Russia to try to circumvent the government's ability to monitor communications and to eavesdrop on communications. And so, it just doesn't seem like we want to be in that category as well. This is, I think, quite dangerous. And also, don't forget, there are a lot of people that use VPNs, and they're outside data centers. There's like lots of ways for people to individually set up their own VPNs that would very easily bypass this type of mass blocking of IP ranges.
Well, according to this article from tomshardware.com, this law is also technically flawed, given that it assumes that a web provider can reliably detect VPN traffic and determine a user's true physical location. They can't. IP reputation databases such as MaxMind and IP2Proxy can flag traffic from known data center IP ranges, but commercial VPN providers rotate addresses constantly, and residential VPN endpoints are largely indistinguishable from standard home connections. So, it's a cat and mouse game, and I think one that the people who understand how the technology works, I think they'll win in the end. Rob?
Yeah, that's a very important point, a very important component of this whole issue, is that this is not a law that it is technically possible to enforce at all. It's just not. I mean, anybody can, set up a VPN on pretty much in any part of the country they want. It's trivial to do that for those in the know. For those not in the know, we listed some VPN services. If you look at category virtual private network services on Wikipedia, there's a whole category full of Wikipedia articles for all different VPN services that one could look into and maybe subscribe to. But as someone who operates a handful of websites and has for a long time, I have no idea who is looking at them. I have no idea, what they're using to access my website. And frankly, I don't care. And if I'm going to, potentially be held responsible for putting something online that somebody else looks at, because I didn't know or care who they were, that's ridiculous. That's like, it's unjust, it's unenforceable, and any sort of technical solution that purports to allow this will not work. You cannot tell where somebody is by the IP address. You can maybe do a crapshoot, but you're not going to be correct for a significant amount of the time.
Gayla, did you have something?
I did, actually, because I was fascinated that this is in Utah. Of any place this could possibly be, it's Utah, which, as a state, has a significant amount of state control over things that require age verifications. Like, if you don't know what I'm talking about, the liquor stores in the state of Utah are owned by the state. And I am fascinated that this state, which is operating at maybe closer to a theocracy than a lot of other places in the United States are at this precise moment, has state control over alcohol consumption, state control over lottery, state control over tobacco products, and is now trying to initiate state control over internet porn.
Yeah. It's a dark time. It really is. And, I think we can avoid getting sucked into it by not buying into the hysteria. oh my God, what are my kids seeing on the internet? You know, kids are going to see all kinds of things. That's not the real issue. The real issue is what kind of control do you want to give to the authorities over what you read, what you are interested in, who you talk to, because all of that goes away when you introduce things like age verification for every little thing on the internet, including installing operating systems. Okay, we can spend the whole hour talking about this. We can spend hours talking about this, and we will spend many hours talking about this, I'm sure, in many, many forums. But this is where we plant the seeds so people can think and maybe give us a call in a few minutes with your thoughts on this and anything else. But here's something else, and you've probably seen this one spreading around. North Carolina just confirmed 34,000 dead people on voter rolls. You guys hear about this? Yeah. Stop the steal. You got it. You get it. You guys get it. I know. Yeah, it sounds alarming. It's designed to sound alarming. Here's what's actually happening. That number, by the way, it's real. That's a real number. Yeah, there's 34,000 dead people on voter rolls. Do you know how this happens? People die. And when people die, they don't take themselves off the voter rolls. They don't fill out the forms. They don't visit. They don't call. They don't do anything they're supposed to do to get their names off the voter rolls. It's the biggest case of dead person voter fraud by dead people that I've ever seen. So what do we do? Okay, well, it seems there's a system in place. Who knew? Well, some people actually did know. The conclusions that are being drawn from these historical statements are simply not valid. North Carolina State Board of Elections found about 34,000 deceased individuals still listed on their voter registration rolls after running a database comparison. The board itself, these are the people who actually did the work, immediately clarified that finding dead names on a list does not mean anyone voted fraudulently. Not a single one of those people voted. Not one. You know why? You know why. You know why they didn't vote. Okay. They were on a list. That's really all that is known. They were on a list. And being on a voter registration list and casting a vote are two completely different things. And zero fraudulent votes have been tied to any of these names. So here's what actually happened. When someone dies in North Carolina, the state health department notifies the elections board weekly, and those names get removed. That system works fine. The problem is when someone registers in North Carolina, then has the audacity to move to another state and die there. Yeah, North Carolina never gets notified because they're only tracking their own death records. This federal database comparison caught the gap people who left the state and died elsewhere created, and their old registration was never cleaned up. It's a data maintenance issue, a boring, administrative, totally normal data maintenance issue. This is literally what voter roll maintenance is supposed to look like. You run the comparison, you find the gaps, you clean the list. The North Carolina board announced it and said they're fixing it. That is the system working. What MAGA is doing with this story is taking a routine bureaucratic finding and dressing it up as proof of a stolen election. They've been doing this for 5 years. Every time election officials do their jobs and find outdated records, the grift machine screams fraud, even when the officials doing the finding explicitly say no fraud occurred. So, that's something to keep in mind. Next time you hear the people screaming from the mountaintops that the elections are being stolen and there's dead people voting and things like that, this is how the system works. It's a good system, and it works just fine. And probably working near you right now. You never hear about it. You never hear about it when it's working perfectly or even efficiently. Okay, you know, there's this other story that got sent to us, which I found to be pretty amazing, because this is a musician I'm quite familiar with. His name is Ashley McGyvick. He's from Nova Scotia, I believe. And he is suing Google for $1.5 million, saying inaccurate information led to a concert cancellation, at the very least, a lot worse than that. He basically, I'm going to play you a little bit of one of his hits from 1995. He had a hit internationally on this album called Hi, How Are You? Recently, Google alleged that he was a sex offender in an AI-generated summary of his life and career. In fact, Ashley McIsaac is a three-time Juno Award-winning musician, and he filed the claim in the Ontario Superior Court of Justice, asserting that Google was liable for the foreseeable republication of its AI-generated overview feature, which previously published defamatory claims that he had been involved, or in fact, convicted of multiple criminal offenses, including the sexual assault of a woman, internet luring involving a child, all kinds of horrible things. Google's AI overview also wrongly stated that McIsaac had been listed on the National Sex Offender Registry for life. None of this is true. As the creator and operator of the AI overview, Google is also liable for injuries and losses arising from the AI overview's defective design, McIsaac's lawsuit says. Google knew or ought to have known that the AI overview was imperfect and could return information that was untrue. He's suing Google for $500,000 in general damages, $500,000 in aggravated damages, and $500,000 in punitive damages. And honestly, I think he can get a lot more than that. And those are Canadian dollars, too. So I think he could get a lot more in American dollars. He claimed he had learned of the inaccurate information when the Sipikanakatik First Nation canceled a concert appearance planned for 19th of December after members of the public complained, citing the misinformation they read on Google. The Sipikanakatik First Nation later issued a public apology to McIsaac, saying decisions were based on incorrect information generated through an AI-assisted search, which mistakenly associated you with offenses unrelated to you. We deeply regret the harm this caused to your reputation and livelihood. That's a sincere apology, it looks like to me. McIsaac previously told the Canadian press that the misinformation had left him with a tangible fear about performing, adding, "I feared for my own safety going on stage because of what I was labeled as, and I don't know how long this will follow me." And it's a nightmare. It's a nightmare when AI decides that you're guilty of something. McIsaac's lawsuit alleges that Google had never contacted him or offered an apology over the error, like the apology we just heard. Google's cavalier and indifferent response to its publication of utterly false statements claiming that McIsaac committed serious sexual offenses, including offenses involving children, justifies the award of aggravated and or punitive damages. At the very least. You know, I asked Gemini for an update on this, you know, if there are any circumstances involving him. And Gemini was very upfront, said very quickly, to be absolutely clear and then in all bold, Ashley McIsaac is not a sex offender and is not listed on any sex offender registry. If you ask anything about Ashley McIsaac, I think that might be the first thing they say. But it's too late. The harm has been done. And you guys have to do a better job when talking about human beings and casting aspersions, you know, just like we all try to do, you know, to try to get it right. Try not to defame people and spread lies. AI has to be held at least to that level. What do you guys think?
So I think part of the thing that it makes me think of is that story about the guy with the feather pillow, and the rabbi says, "Open up the pillow and stand on top of the mountain and open up the pillow and then go collect all the feathers." And the guy's like, "I can't collect all the feathers." And the rabbi said, "Yeah, like you can't collect your words after they're out of your mouth." But so that's thing number one.
I never heard that, but that's really good. I like that.
Every Jewish child has heard this story, I promise you. But number two, and perhaps more importantly,
I'm not quite sure how to help you with that.
No one was talking to you.
Okay. You know, you're the problem. Why don't you just shut up for a little while?
But perhaps more importantly,
learn something.
I think this isn't even Gemini that's the issue. It is the AI quick response thing that automatically gets shoved into your Google searches unless you specifically put subtract AI at the end of your search.
I didn't know you could do that. Really?
You can do that. Yeah, you can turn off the automatic AI suggestions before you get any of your actual Google
results. Where do you subtract the AI from?
So at the end of your search string,
okay.
So you like Ashley McIsaac and then space minus AI.
Wow. Okay.
And, right. Because it's not Gemini. It's this other thing. And the other thing is like the quickest, what's the amalgamation of all the possible search concepts. But this is, I remember talking about this on the show in December when it happened. And he was like, this is going to chase me for the rest of my life.
We talked about this already? I'm sorry. I don't remember.
But the lawsuit is the new piece.
Okay. All right.
Because they apologized and they're like, you should come. And he said, no, it's going to take me a while to reschedule with you guys. But yeah, the story about the feather pillow is a really good one too.
Wow. Yeah.
And the thing about this is one of the main points of grief about the whole AI slop era is that who's responsible for this? If a person went online and started spreading, you know, rumors like this or assertions like this about some public figure, they could, in theory, be sued for slander or libel or however that goes. They could be, you know, held accountable for what they put out there.
Look what happens when you put seashells on a beach, you know?
Exactly. But, you know, who can be said to be the person who put this out there? It's a robot controlled by Google. And if Google doesn't have some accountability in this matter, then I don't know what that says for the entire media environment, really.
Well, the Dash AI is new, so I'm sure when Ashley hears about that, he'll be happy. That Dash AI, okay, that solves everything. We just have to type that at the end. Doesn't matter. Oh, yeah, fine. Oh, my God. What a world. All right, one final story, then we'll open up phone lines. This is for people who are worried about what's going over their phone network. From reproductive rights to climate change to big tech. I'm reading a promo for the newspaper. I'm sorry. Why did they put that at the beginning of the story? No, that's not. Okay. Sorry. I almost gave a speech on why you should support the Independent. Yeah. When does the story begin? I'm sorry, folks. This is... okay, here it is. A new Christian-focused phone network that blocks pornography and LGBT content launches this week. Because the two go hand in hand, right? Yeah. It's believed to be the first of its kind. Well, I guess that's good news if there's no others. Launching yesterday, Radiant Mobile's service will use Israeli cybersecurity firm Allot to organize website domains into more than 100 categories and will block all pornographic material at a network level so users cannot undo the restriction. We'll just see about that. Radiant is also said to offer the option of blocking material related to gender and trans issues. We are going to create, and we think we have every right to do so, an environment that is Jesus-centric, that is void of pornography, void of LGBT, void of trans, said Radiant Mobile founder Paul Fisher, previously an agent for supermodels. Which I'm just going to avoid that part of the story completely. So, yeah, we're talking about erasing people's identities. You think every right to do so? Well, I guess this is what the courts are for. Radiant is even able to block certain sections of a website dedicated to LGBT issues, according to Fisher, who also once hosted a TV show in which he tried to get people in rehab centers and homeless shelters into modeling. I'm going to stop reading things that this guy has done in the past because they're pissing me off. Basically, here's the example of their great technology at work. Yale.edu would not be blocked, but LGBT.yale.edu would be blocked. This is technology that we had in the 1990s. Any high school kid could do that. This guy's making a living at this? Radiant is a mobile virtual network operator, meaning it does not own any cell towers, but will buy bandwidth from larger providers. In this particular case, the provider they're buying from is T-Mobile. Those are the people to contact if this is upsetting you as much as it's upsetting me. They compare themselves to Trump's Trump Mobile. Of course they do. A representative for T-Mobile did not comment on whether such content restrictions violate their policies. According to Fisher, Radiant has recruited Christian influencers to promote the initiative and has established relationships with thousands of churches across the U.S., proposing plans to have part of their congregants $30 per month radio subscription donated to their church. It just goes on and on and on. But basically, you know, we're seeing yet another example of marginalized groups being attacked, being erased, and high technology being used as a weapon against them. Any thoughts on the best way to attack them first? Go ahead, Gila.
It was I dove into the Radiant Mobile FAQ this morning and almost started crying. It was awful. So you have the phone, and then you have an app that you have to put on the phone, and there's a lifetime subscription you can get, which will give you 20% off on your first year and will waive the annual membership fee, because of course there's also an annual membership fee. And they have like apps and games that they're trying to basically erase everything south of the waist and replace it with the Bible. And I'm so squicked out by this, and I can't help but wonder if this guy who used to be the modeling agent has ever, I don't know, met people.
I'm trying to understand this. So wait, you're saying everything south of the waist is replaced with a Bible? I mean, that sounds kind of perverse if you think
about it. Well, this is the thing, because they're not barring things that are violent. I'm sure you can still play first-person shooter games.
You just said the Bible. The Bible's pretty damn violent. They're not banning
that. I know it is. But they're also probably not banning the sexy parts of the Bible either. Or, you know, does their Bible not include the Song of Songs?
All right. Well, every second we're talking about this is a second away from our callers. So let's open up the phone lines and get a dose of sanity instead. but boy, this is something I want to focus on a little bit more, because this kind of thing cannot stand. 802-321-4225 is our telephone number. That's right. It's not the usual BAI phone number. It's our special phone number. We are on live with a special call-in edition of Off the Hook. And you can call 802-321-4225. And let me just say, if you call the YouTube version of the show, which is on every week, please don't call this show, because we want to open this up to people who are listening to WBAI. So again, once more, 802-321-4225. Oh, we have a call. I didn't hear the phone ring. All right, let's take this first call. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Go ahead.
You want to open this up, people?
Yes, Emmanuel.
All right, Rebel, let me just say right away, maybe you didn't hear me. I directed that to you, that if you call the show every week, and even when we're not on, please don't call this one so other people have a chance. That's all. I just would love for other people to occasionally talk to us. 802-321-4225. Yes, cut him off, obviously. Did you think I was going to have a conversation after that, Kyle? I thought I was pretty clear. 802-321-4225 is our phone number. I'm sorry for anybody else trying to get through. And if you call when somebody else calls, it winds up ringing somewhere, and we have no access to that. So, if somebody else is on the air, please just hang up and call back when they're not.
And while we're waiting for that call, I will also remind folks that BAI needs your support. If you go to buddy.wbai.org and throw in what you can to keep us going on this station, on this program, on this network, we would really appreciate it. It's the only thing that keeps us on the air. Go to buddy.wbai.org and do what you can to be part of what keeps us on the air.
And don't forget to mention that you're becoming a buddy in the name of Off the Hook. Basically, tell them we sent you. It helps.
It really does.
It really does. It helps everybody. Okay, we have another phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Go ahead.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes, we hear you fine.
Hey, thank you so much. I love you guys.
Well, thanks for calling.
Thank you for the laugh, because once a year, I feel like we get hit with the dead people on voter rolls, but there's no, they fail to tell you that there's no fraud because, well, dead people can't vote, I think was the part that you were missing, that you were just saying, you know why, right? Yeah. I wanted to make sure that was said on dead people can't vote. That's why there's no fraud. I love that. That is one of the funniest things.
Yeah, it's something
Thank you so much for the laugh.
Of course, people don't think it through, but it's pretty obvious.
Yeah, that was good. And I love all the things you cover in technology. I appreciate that so much. I work as an engineer. I actually work with a lot of y'all, and I appreciate all the work you do. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for calling. We appreciate the support. Take care.
Peace and love.
I don't know if he was near a truck backing up or what. There was a lot of beeping there.
Hard at work.
Hard at work, yeah, I'm sure. Engineering things going on there. That sounded very busy. 802-321-4225. We're only on for another, 20 minutes or so. So if you have something to say to us, this is a good time to call in and say it. We have a phone call, and good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Go ahead.
On for another
You got to turn the radio down if you want to be on the radio.
You know this is a good time to call in and
please turn the radio down.
Yeah, on call.
Okay, Rebel, you're banned now for next week. How you like that? And you can be banned for a lot longer than that too.
Yeah, that's rude.
Yeah, and keep an eye out for that number if he calls back.
I'm not in charge of that anymore.
Oh, that's right. It's over here now. Yeah, well, I didn't see it. All right. I'm doing a bunch of other things.
I know you're busy.
All right. 802-321-4225. Signal people. It's not an entertainment show. You're participating in it.
Right? They are bemused.
They're
sitting
back with the popcorn and everything rolling on the floor.
No, they're...
Mm-hmm. It's just nice to be part of all this. While we're waiting for another call, the movie Joy Bubbles, the documentary, played here in Queens this past weekend. And I got to say, it was a great movie. Check it out. It's making the rounds of all sorts of screenings and film festivals and stuff with an eye toward at some point in the future being widely available. Joy Bubbles is the name of the film. It's the name of its subject, and it's worth a shot.
Okay. And we have another phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Go ahead.
Hi. Well, my compliments for the good work. Keep it up.
Thank you.
I understand you were discussing some sort of scandal, but, you know, I am very wary of these electoral scandals. And, you know, of course, today the papers or the media were full of how Trump triumphed in Indiana without mentioning that he triumphed with his Republican base. And, you know, it sounds like he already won the election, but...
Right. No, you're absolutely right. I felt the same thing because, yeah, they're talking about him winning by having his candidate beat another Republican. And the only reason he supported that candidate was because the other one defied him. And if you dare to defy him, he'll come after you. I think a more concerning case was what happened today, where a state a politician in Virginia had her offices raided by the FBI when she played a major part in the district remapping in that state that was victorious a week or so ago. And that is the kind of thing. It's a purge that, that we can look forward to. If you piss him off in any way, the feds are going to come for you no matter what you're involved in. And that we should all be scared of.
Exactly. And don't forget that the Virginia remapping has been blocked by the Virginia highest court. So basically, in spite of the will of the electors, the court said, no. The question was formulated ambiguously. It's some conservative group sued, and basically that, you know, of course, the campaign for the redistricted also made a motion, but that thing is still undecided.
Well, I don't think...
Now. And it's probably...
I don't think that's going to stand in court. But you know, if you talk to people, if you talk to people though, on the conservative side, their view literally is that this should hold for Republicans, but Democrats should not be allowed to do it. That is literally what they don't care anymore. They're not hiding. They believe in a one-party state, and they are now fighting to get that.
That's exactly it. And, you know, just like with the corruption, we're not hiding anymore. It's out in the open. Everything else, you know, every aspect of political public life is with the same criteria. We don't care It's us versus them.
The ballroom. The ballroom, for instance, you know, that was going to be paid for by private funds. And now, we just had this incident at the correspondence dinner. So now, no, we have to pay taxpayer money, $1 billion, because of that. You know, within minutes, they had that ready to go. It is so corrupt. Yeah. It's not even funny. It's just badly done. And nobody's falling for it.
Yes. And, you know, the important thing is that people keep paying attention and are not demoralized and are not turned away from going to the polls. You know, as difficult and bothersome as they make it, that's the only way that things may change. And I'll leave someone else to speak as well.
All right. Well, thanks. Thank you so much. Thanks for that call and thanks for raising those points. Yeah, it's hard not to be discouraged, especially with what the Supreme Court did last week. And when people see that they're getting no representation, you know, you might see reactions that are unfortunate. Let's put it that way. But we shouldn't be surprised. You keep pushing people like this, bad things will happen. It happens anywhere in the world. Why wouldn't it happen here? So we have to fight back. We have to make sure that people are represented, that everybody is able to vote, and that our votes mean something, and not deal with this nonsense anymore. Kyle.
Yeah, it's that thing, you know, that is people's recourse. It should be protected. They should be, you know, be able to access the civic duty that is voting. And when you deny that and take it away, you're demoralizing the populace. And it's incredibly dangerous.
But of course, you know, they won't say that we're denying it. They'll say, you know, we're letting you vote. It's just not going to count. And you got to prove that, you know, we're doing this based on race. Yeah, we're going to admit that. We're going to say that out loud. Of course they don't do that. That's not how bullies work. You know, they will keep getting away with it, and they'll get powerful people on their side. It's disgusting, but I don't think it's fooling anybody.
Well, you can't allow that, because people will get they do get sort of pushed to desperation, and you have to keep the pressure on and shine light on these tactics and make sure that ability to change the system that we have is available to people. And let's not kid ourselves. We have a very long history of political violence in this country. That we're in a relative period of peace is maybe a pleasant abnormality in that long history. And in the history of the world, even. I mean, come on. The reason that we uphold these institutions is so that we don't go back to those tactics.
Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, as long as we don't give up, we will always keep our humor, keep our confidence, keep our solidarity, and we win in the end. There are so many people who have been through so much worse and have won. All right, let's take a phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Go ahead. Speak up.
In Queens. I can finally hear you guys.
You're calling from Queens? You're very choppy.
Yeah. Okay. So now it's your turn to not be able to hear me.
We hear you. It's like you're in a helicopter, though. But go ahead. We'll try and make you out.
No, I'm on the LIE.
Okay.
So anyway, Google. All right. So you know how software tries to like be helpful and like, oh, your hard disk space is running low.
Uh-huh.
You know, you have like 1% of your hard disk left. I have a whole hard disk left, and Google goes through my phone and like looks for things to delete, and it found not very large files, but some naughty files. And it's like, these files specifically, you should delete these files to save you 50 megabytes of space on where I have like 5 gigs free. You should delete. I'm like, what? Why is it doing this?
It should have said, you should delete these files to avoid some unpleasant questions later.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, it doesn't matter. But I don't know who told it to do these things, but I had a question.
It's intelligent. That's the answer.
They're intelligent?
Well, that's their answer, that, you know, it's intelligence and they're just doing what makes sense. But oftentimes it doesn't make sense to us illogical humans.
No, we're very illogical. Do you guys take mail and then read it online on the air?
Yeah, absolutely. Email mostly, because you know I don't remember last time we checked the mailbox at the station. But yeah,
I know I've sent some things before and like never heard it. But
well, I mean, not every piece gets read on the air, but it all does get read.
I don't recall any piece, but it's all right. Maybe you can start doing it. All right, that's all I had.
Okay, thanks for your call, and drive carefully.
All right, thanks.
All right.
Take care.
OTH at 20.